Welcome back to Bread and Butter, everybody, where we are serving up the basics for Hearthstone improvement in episode 59. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host Tito. Tito, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you doing, Doc?
I'm doing pretty great. But you know what else is great? Having returned guests. And this week we got Chanman. Chanman, how are you?
Good, good. How are you guys?
It's good. It's nice to have you back. So thank you.
Been a year, right? I think we were just talking and exactly 52 weeks ago, I think it was.
Yeah, it was 52 episodes, something like that. Yeah. So I think you were in, maybe it might have been closer to March, but it's been a long time.
Oh, March. Okay. Yeah. More like 11 months. Cool. Yeah. Anyways, great to be back.
So, Tito.
Yep.
I'm going crazy today, I guess. What have you been doing outside of Hearthstone or inside of Hearthstone?
Doc, do you need to hit the reset button?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Well, so I have been playing Hearthstone, a lot of Hearthstone, as one does. I talked a little bit about this last week, I believe, where I kind of tanked my rank a bit because I was starting to try to make things like Rock and Roll Taunt Warrior work with my own kind of spin on it. And then I was like, I don't like doing that because I don't like seeing my rank fall, even though I said I'm okay with that. And then I'm really not okay with that. And then Donkey suggested that I play on alt servers. So I thought that was a great idea. So I started working on Asia and EU for a while there. I had zero stars or either zero or one stars on both those servers. So it's been a real grind. But I started working them up and I was going like five. I would go to a rank floor, switch server, go to a rank floor, switch server, go to a rank floor. But then today I hit Legend on Asia. My stats were about 76-3, something like that. There was a lot of it was fairly easy climbing. But because there's so many bots over in Asia, my entry rank was 156,995. Now I'm not too worried about my rank there yet, but wow, that's a lot of legends. But again, they have a huge botting issue, especially since the China servers went down, I think. And it sounds like there's just a lot of people that are running computers and botting and it's cheap and they can make some money off it. So it's something we know that Hearthstone is dealing with. I think there might be something coming soon. Who knows? But they know it's a problem. But that was nice. Good. I finally hit that. Okay.
Did you free to play that? Like on? I mean, I haven't played on other servers. Do you have to purchase all the cards and...
Yeah,
on
so
the different servers. Wow.
So I free to played that.
That's impressive.
Well, so what I did was,
wow, cool.
So I took I took Paladin, which didn't really have many legendaries. I put Pure Paladin, I took. So I have three decks between the two servers. I have the Paladin, which I've been playing a lot of anyway, Sludge Warlock, and Shadow Priest, which has been fine. And the other day, while I was on a long meeting, I just sat there and I went and deleted all my old. Because these accounts I tried playing a long, long time ago, but I never really did. So I deleted all my wild cards and dusted them. And now I have a lot of dust, so hopefully when the rotation comes around, I can start building up that collection. But for now, I'm keeping it simple and just that. But I did that. And then on the EU server, I'm at plat 10. I'm like 49-6 there, and I'm going to try to finish that before the end of the month. Again, mostly playing Pure Pally, Shadowlock. It's been fun. But it's been challenging to just sit there and grind. It is hard to not have any bonuses. Wow. I don't recommend it. 1 out of 10 stars. actually 1 out of 11 stars, if I'm being honest. But you know, I'm looking forward to the start of next season and I want to try. I say Wild Legend. I think we talked about that last week. So that was the first time I've ever done that. So this is the first time I've had double legend, triple legend. I'm hoping to have quadruple legend. And then next month, we're going to try to get into Twist, get there, and all the standard servers, and also Wild on America. So I have a plan for next month. We'll see how it goes. I may not be as successful as I was this month, but we're going to try.
Wow. I don't know how you have time to get all of those legends. That's crazy, man.
I stream a lot.
That's wild. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can barely get enough time to get one legend, much less five or six. That's crazy.
Well,
yeah.
This is new. This is new.
It's awesome.
And I've been using some of my spare time. It's been snowing, so it's not like we're going a lot of places. So And it's easy to just sit there and watch TV and grind games or whatever you're doing. So I watched the movie yesterday. I really like that, but we'll talk about that later. Jamin, what have you been doing in Hearthstone?
Hearthstone, mostly playing War. I think if you people that, or you guys, if you remember from our last conversation, I've just pretty much become like a hardcore one class guy now. So I've just been playing Warrior and just Reno Warrior. I've had a lot of fun just playing Reno, even though it's like not necessarily very good and much harder to grind up to Legend than, you know, playing Paladin or anything like that, or even just you know, your typical you know, just Warrior, the not Fatigue Warrior, but the what's the Warrior with the injured
Enrage Warrior?
Enrage Warrior, exactly. So I've actually avoided Enrage Warrior just because I made Legend once with it and it was like so easy that it wasn't very hard. And so I usually like to make it hard for myself. So I've just been playing Reno, just, you know, experimenting with all these different battle cries. And I don't know, it's just that greedy side of me that really enjoys that and really enjoys just grinding that out and just, you know, trying to get to Legends. But I haven't quite gotten there this month yet. I'm like on rank 2-1, just right at that border. So I just need to get like 3 in a row here at some point, get lucky, I guess. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. Reno's been, honestly, I was getting a little bit bored with just current standard Warrior, but Reno's really jazzed things up for me.
Yeah, and you and about 99.9% of other players have been avoiding Enrage Warrior, apparently, even though it's still good.
It's just so boring. I mean, it's really good. It's crazy good, right? It was arguably one of the best decks this last year. But I don't know. It's just too easy. It's like way too easy to play and to grind up.
I don't find winning ever boring. But Doc,
you know what? Like I used to be exactly like that, but somewhere in the last few years, I just stopped really caring that much about it and really had more fun just really, you know, just exploring a lot of the cards, you know, and going that route in standard. You know, I know a lot of people probably done it in wild and even just arena, you know, back in the day and whatnot. But I really didn't start doing that until the last few years, probably after I took a break. And then I kind of came back and it's just like all these new cards. And it's just, I don't know, I just want to try out all these new cards and kind of figure out things myself that probably been figured out by everybody already. And really enjoying the game, you know, that way, instead of just focusing on getting the Legend as fast as I can kind of thing.
That's fair.
So, yeah, it's just a different approach. It's not, you know, obviously nothing's better or worse, but it's allowed me to, I don't know, call me a filthy casual now. I don't know.
Man, play the game however you want to play. If you're having fun, you're having fun.
Yeah. That's the beauty of the game, right? So it's cool.
Yep.
For the love of the game. Absolutely. Doc, what have you been doing in Hearthstone?
Yeah, so I queued up some Treant Druid again, because I played that deck a bunch a few months ago and haven't really played it since. And I queued into an Enrage Warrior and they conceded on turn 5.
Exactly.
I just went right under. Like I was assuming they were control. And then I just mulligan super like aggro early and it just worked and it felt good. So I'm starting to play standard again because I kind of took a hiatus for a minute. I started listening to Blizzlet because I haven't been caught up on that in a week or two. So I listened to it at work today, and hearing them talk about the different decks they were playing got me interested in wanting to play standard again. So played some standard. I had some fun. I'll probably play more standard tonight after we get off. But yeah, Treant Druid, still good, as everybody knows.
Yeah, I've lost many times to Treant Druid playing my Reno Brand Warrior and losing, you know, on turn 5, like you said.
and apparently Smarms is playing Treant Druid at a 95% rate or something like that, is what she's saying. So
yep.
It's still a good deck. Even it got nerfed today. We'll talk about that later, but I still think it's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think the thing that's been most satisfying for me is like I've hated Patchwork for so long. Oh. You know, I literally disdain that card for like the last 2 years or whatever, however long it's been out. And so when I finally got, I mean, they released Boom Boss, but Boom Boss by itself like wasn't, you know, like it wasn't the same kind of immediate effect, right? But
yeah,
when you get Bran and Boom, you know, like and you get the Boom Boss mixed with the Gaslight combo, it's like, oh, I finally get to experience this, but maybe 3x, 4x, 5x times more than, than playing Patchwork. So that definitely brings a lot of satisfaction for me.
So is Patchwork the card you dislike the most in the current meta?
I mean, not anymore. Probably just with... definitely not anymore. I can tell you what card I disdain the most. I hate the Paladin card that gives you the Wind Fury and the Divine Shield. It's just, it's like too easy for them to win with that card. It's like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Just stick one. As long as one card is sticky on the board, it's like they win the game. So it's at least for when I'm playing against them. Maybe other decks have a different experience with it, but I hate that card.
It's going to be a little more difficult for a Paladin to do that. We'll talk about that again in a little bit.
Yep.
For me,
yep.
For me, the card I hate the most is Trial by Fire. Not that I like Patchwork or anything like that, but you just sit there and you're like, why is Trial by Fire? Why did they bring it down to 6 mana? 7 mana, it was still gross. And 6 mana is just, they were like, hey, you guys should play this card. Really, like, please go play this card. And I wish they never said that. Doc, how about yourself? What card do you just, which one grinds your gears?
So when I really want to try to sit down and play like a quote unquote pet deck, which is now Sludge Lock, because Sludge Lock is good. But like I wanted Sludge Lock to be good at the start of the expansion. So like I played that for too long because it was not good early. And I forget the Death Knight card, but it's the Death Knight legendary that puts
hell yeah,
extra plagues in your deck, and then they're indefinite from that point, like once you draw them after they've been played. I hate that card.
Right? Yeah. 4/4 card, yep.
I hate that card the most, because it just shuffling destroys that deck, because the whole thing is just to have all the sludges on the bottom, and then you just do the stuff, and it's a good time.
Yeah, but now that card, I mean, I completely agree with you, but now you don't even have to worry about that card anymore, because even if they play it, you just play, what is it, creative... the 6 mana, deal 6 damage, destroy 6, because you're bound to hit some of the plagues there, and also the sludges, so it works out.
Yeah, but I don't want more plagues.
That's true. That just kills them.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting deck, though.
No, that card destroys them. That card removes them, because it destroys the bottom cards.
Like removes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It destroys a card, so that actually kind of helps clear that up for you.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'll have to throw that in.
Fantastic. It's a great card, too. I mean, it's just good card. But
yeah, I try to run Steam Cleaner just to at least help with a lot of those. I mean, it still does damage, obviously, but it does less. At least it's less controlled versus whenever you get to unleash them all on me at one time.
That's
six cards. That's brutal.
So Chanman, what have you been doing outside of the game?
Outside, you know, mostly, you know, I took a break after Juked and was just doing Streamer Showdown at some different events. So I did it at TwitchCon this year in Vegas, and hopefully there's going to be a lot more actually this coming year. But honestly, just really spending time with the family. My oldest son's applying for colleges, you know, and him getting ready for that, you know, really want. It's helping him out a little bit with that. And my youngest son is playing AAU basketball. So this is kind of his first year doing it. It's a lot of work there. It's like, I didn't realize how much work there was when you have an actual child that plays sports. It's, it's pretty crazy actually. So having time to do that, I think was really nice. But yeah, for the most part, really just, you know, chilling in terms of, you know, work wise, just doing Streamer Showdown at live events, and not as many online events. I've really been trying to spread out and make these a bit more of a, you know, just a live venue type of thing. And so we'll have more this coming year, and I'm, you know, maybe a little bit of a spoiler or just a little bit of an insight or first time hearing, but I'll probably be doing some Streamer Showdown in the sports arena pretty soon. So, you know, be on the lookout for that. It'll be our first time doing one that's not in gaming, or actually not in just like entertainment in like the movie space or gaming. This will be the first time we endeavor into sports.
Very nice.
Heck yeah.
Looking forward to that. Doc, how about yourself? Yeah. What have you been up to?
Oh boy. Okay. Everyone get ready.
Oh boy.
it's going to be kind of a long one again. as is me. So had our first session of our family D&D game. And by family, I mean my partner, Cortland, her two brothers, and their stepsister. Had them all over. We're playing the module Thandelver and Below, the Shattered Obelisk. It's a rehashing of the first, like, D&D 5e, like, entry adventure, The Lost Mines of Thandelver. They changed a couple details and have just added a bunch of other stuff to make it way more interesting, because it was very, very vanilla when it first came out. And they had an absolute blast. I had an absolute blast running the game. There's a section in the first part of this adventure where there's this cave and there's these two wolves towards the entrance of the cave that are chained up because they're like slaves to these goblins. Well, they were unsuccessful with taming one of the wolves because they wanted both of them. They tamed the other one. And unbeknownst to them, the big boss at the end of the cave had another wolf. And so they talked to some NPCs. They incited a coup to overthrow the big boss in the cave. And so they had like 8 goblin NPCs and like 2 goblin boss NPCs to help them fight this final this boss. And Garrett, he's a leanin monk, so like a lion person monk, had like goblin meat from a goblin he had killed and quartered, and wanted to tame the boss's wolf. And I was like, okay, we'll roll with advantage since you have like a 5-pound chunk of meat. And he rolled the dice at the exact same time and rolled 2 nat 20s, which odds are like 1 in 400 that would happen. So it was really cool. Jeez. So like he succeeded. It was really awesome. And that was like the last roll of the night. So it was like this big, all of us got super excited because it was just a very cool, very unlikely thing to happen. And it happens in the first session. It was a lot of fun. They were very excited. Earlier that day, Garrett and I, we went to this thing called Dino Fest. It was at the Natural History Museum at the University of Utah, and it was just a dinosaur convention. They had a bunch of paleontologists and a bunch of paleo artists there, and we got to go into the fossil storage room, and they had fossils that we could touch, and then obviously there was a bunch of fossils we couldn't touch. And they had different paleontologists in there to like talk to us about the like whatever fossils they were showcasing and whatnot. And we also got to go into the fossil prep room, which is like where they work on like doing the final bits of like excavation after they're able to haul the fossils back from the site to the lab. And there is this one paleontologist who is standing in front of Hadrosaur skull, which Hadrosaur, if for anyone who's watched Land Before Time, is a ducky. It's a duck-billed dinosaur. And we were just talking to him, and he just started talking to us about the fossil. He's like, yeah, he's like, I dug this up. And we were like, oh? And so we kind of started talking to him more about that process. And I asked him how long it took. And he's like, well, we only were able to salvage the front half because the back half went into the riverbed and got really beat up. So we only took the front half, and we were pretty quick. It took us about 3 weeks, which I'm sure for his line of work, 3 weeks is extremely fast. And for people that aren't in that line of work, like 3 weeks could seem like it takes a long time. And then we kept talking to him, and he asked us if we had saw the Protoceratops skull out in front of the prep room. And we're like, oh yeah, we took a picture by it on our way in here. He's like, well, and he told us he discovered a new subspecies of Nasutoceratops. So he discovered a new subspecies of a ceratopsian. He discovered it before the pandemic, so he couldn't work on it for a long time. And he has been working on it for about a year and a half now. He's not anywhere close to being done. But he said like they could tell it was different just because of like how big the crest was, and like the details that were in the crest didn't fit the pattern of what like a Nasutoceratops should have. And so that was really cool. So we were really excited about that. And yesterday I finished book 2 of what I believe now is called like the Imperium Saga. Which is written by Rebecca Yaros. I finished Iron Flame, and I don't go on TikTok often, but I went on to TikTok today And I found out she followed me on TikTok 2 days ago, probably because I liked one of her posts. So that was pretty cool. That's it for me outside of Hearthstone. I don't know if that was a lot very fast, but it's been a fun weekend and a fun week.
I think we know why you've never been asked to be on Play for Tempo.
What have you been doing outside of Hearthstone, Tito?
Not a whole lot. It's been most, as you can tell by the amount of Hearthstone I've been playing a lot of Hearthstone, but it's just been quiet. It's winter. Walk the dogs when I can, or working, and I'm looking forward to the end of dry January, which is the middle of this week, Thursday, I believe, and I'm debating on what I want for my first beverage to be, and I'm looking forward to that. But outside of that, I'm just counting down the days till spring, because I am not a winter fan, and I know I live in New England, I know it's on me to be here, but it just is what it is. And I think I like winter being there because it makes me appreciate spring and summer and fall all the much more. But man, I cannot wait for winter to be done. But enough about that. Doc, we've already talked to Chan Man once, but I don't think a lot of people might remember or might not have even been listening then. So why don't we get to know him a little bit better?
Okay. Yeah, sounds good to me. So Chan Man, what does the V stand for in Chan Man V?
The V stands for, it actually stands for five.
Okay.
And I think originally, so the story, this is the story. The story is back in college, like when I was at UT Austin, I was getting into Warcraft 2, like just getting into that, really just the first semblance of competitive gaming in Warcraft 2. This guy at A&M wrote this IPX emulator called Kali at the time. So it was the first time that you were seeing, you know, these RTS type of leagues and whatnot forming. And there was even a ladder. There was like an actual ladder that was online. And, you know, you had to manually like send in results and stuff like that. So it was the first time like there was competitive, I would say competitive Warcraft. And so when I was getting into that, I found a guy that was in my dorm, and he was, I mean, there was already a little bit of a scene, and you know, there were clans and things like that. There were clans back then, but I guess you would call them teams these days. And so he kind of got me into the 2v2 environment. So I was playing with him, and they're like, "Hey, what's your name going to be?" And so I was like, "I'll be Chan Man," because that's what everybody used to call me in high school, just my nickname. And so I was Chan Man, but it turns out there were other Chan Men. So and there was a very famous Chan Man in Type Racer. I don't know if you guys used to follow Type Racer. I always got confused. Like, people would always say, "Hey, I'm a big fan of your Type Racing records and all this stuff." I'm like, "That's not me." Right. So anyways, there was even a Chan Man in the Warcraft 2 scene as well. So that was apparently on before I came on. So once I got on, I was like, "Oh, just to differentiate myself, I'll just be Chan Man 5, but I use the V instead." And so for a while, I was Chan Man 5, but then everybody just kept calling me Chan Man V. So I was just like, "Okay, I'll just consider it a V." Whatever, you know, just kind of go with what everybody is calling it. But yeah, so it means five, and I don't know why I chose five. There was an X, there's a Chan Man X too, but I just chose the V just to be more unique.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So thank you.
Yeah.
So other than Hearthstone, what other games have you been playing since we've talked to you last?
Lately, I've been playing a ton of Terraria, believe it or not. I didn't play when it first came. I mean, when it was out and it was popular. So I just really started getting into that and with some friends and playing some mods like Calamity. And it's been a lot of fun. I haven't played, you know, like a Minecraft type of, you know, this type of game in a while. So it's been fun getting to do that and kind of reconnecting with some of the guys and or the close friends I had that we used to game all the time a few years back. So yeah, really enjoying that. Finished it on normal mode, so we're kind of going and doing. Actually, we finished Terraria proper in normal mode. Now we're doing Calamity in hard mode, which is a lot harder. So it's been an experience.
Nice. So you mentioned Streamer Showdown earlier and how you were wanting to do, like change it up a bit. Would you be wanting to talk a little bit more about how you're gonna like do that transition?
It's not really so much changing it up. I mean, I think if anything, it's more additive than anything else. I mean, what we, you know, Streamer Showdown and what we do has always been successful. I mean, we every time we do it, I mean, I think even to this day, like, everybody has a blast doing it, and we kind of take pride in that, so that everybody wants to do it all the times. You know, like, the last thing people want to do is something that feels arduous. So it's been great that the show, even through all these years, or even, you know, after all these years, it's still pretty consistent in terms of the product, you know, and just the success. So in terms of just, like, I would say the big change for me isn't so much like doing anything differently. It's more just focus. So focusing a little bit less on growing the Streamer Showdown brand itself, and more trying to work with just bigger events, you know, event organizers, or even just influencers, different brands really, and trying to create, you know, these type of game show products or these shows really. And trying to do some really cool stuff on the stage, you know, working alongside folks and enhancing it that way. I mean, when I went to TwitchCon, you know, when I was doing Streamer Showdown at TwitchCon, you know, we weren't the only show on the main stage. I mean, there were all kinds of really great and creative shows that like Ludwig, you know, Ludwig and Mitskiff and Austin, right? Austin has named that price kind of show. They were all, they're on the same stage as us. So it was really cool getting a chance to see how they do their shows, how they execute their shows, and just all the, you know, more physical elements that they do versus, you know, what we do, which is mostly digital, you know, and online and more, you know, trivia show more so than these kind of physical, you know, let's have all these influencers do silly stuff. Right.
Yeah.
So trying to figure out how we can maybe incorporate a little bit of that into what we do, which, okay. You know, I still think what we do is still, you know, unique compared to what others do with just our platform and just what we're capable of doing with our platform. So yeah. So anyways, we'll be adding more and having just more unique segments to, you know, the different editions, like with Hearthstone, right? We always had Honest Hearthstone, you know, and things that were just like very specific, like what deck is this, right? We'd show like six cards and you'd have to guess what deck. That was very unique to Hearthstone. And yeah. So and the Battlegrounds, I remember one of the coolest things we had was just betting on which side would win on Battleground videos and things like that. so yeah, you know, we're trying to do just customize a bit more, just the different editions for the type of, you know, the type of community or type of content that we're going to be doing.
What would you say would be your favorite episode of Streamer Showdown you've ever had?
My favorite one? That's a good question. I mean, I think there's a difference between online and live stage. I think online it would have to be either between, it's probably the one where we had Ben Brode on for the first time. It was like Ben Brode and Toast and Crypt. I mean, it was like an all-star kind of situation, but it just worked out so perfectly that they were all tied going into the very last question. I don't know if you guys remember that or not, or if y'all watched it. But it was so classic because it was a 50-50 situation. Like, one of them got it wrong. So they all rang in, I remember, and one of them got it wrong. And it was literally a 50-50 at the end. And Toast ended up getting it right, you know, and ended up winning the whole thing. But I remember there was just this funny joke and meme, Hearthstone 50-50, coin flip. It's just like so perfect, right? Yeah. But anyways, online, that was probably my favorite. I think on stage, it was probably... honestly, it was probably one that we did at E3 with Matt Pat and DJ Wee hosting, and it wasn't even like one of our ones on the big stage. It was on one of those. It was in the Twitch booth, you know, over at E3. Mm-hmm. But it was the first. It was the first one we did with Twitch. The first one we did with DJ Wee, and I remember him just being so excited, and the questions just hit so well too. Those guys were just such pros and awesome. And like, when you write the questions, I'm co-writer of all the questions, right? When you write the questions, you envision how they're going to go. You know, a lot of times when you're writing them, you're like, oh God, this, you know, trying to like, okay, hopefully they catch on to this and it, you know, and it results in something funny, right? Or whatever. And I think with that show, the writing, I think, hit the most. I mean, literally everything that I was hoping for kind of hit on that show. So that was a good one. That one was made me a little nervous too, because we were having some internet issues, and you know, Streamer Showdown runs on the internet, so it was making me get a little freaked out, because we had the iPads and they were using Wi-Fi, and you know, ever since that show, we never used Wi-Fi ever again. but overall, yeah, it was super memorable, it was a really, really great show.
Heck yeah! So I feel like it's safe for me to guess That's your favorite Hearthstone class is Warrior.
Yeah.
So if Warrior's your favorite, what's your second favorite class?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think my second favorite is probably Druid. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably Druid. I think at one point it was Priest, but I just never really played the last like generation or two of Priest, which is really strange because it totally fits my personality in terms of being greedy and control and everything. But for some reason, I just haven't ever dove into, you know, the modern Priest. And it's just crazy to me because every time I play it's Priest, it's like, that'd be fun to play. That'd be fun to play that card, you know, or that'd be great. And I don't know, for some reason, I just haven't gotten a chance to play it a lot. So Druid, I played some Dragon Druid. I played some of that recent. I actually haven't played too much outside of Dragon Druid to really say that I've played anything. So, but yeah, just really those two.
What are your favorite warrior? What is your favorite warrior deck of all time? And what is your favorite Druid deck of all time?
Favorite warrior deck of all time, probably, gosh, that spans a long, I mean, maybe the molten giant one, or we're talking like a long time. I mean, yeah. Obviously I've been in Hearthstone since the beginning, so we're talking about some just really disgusting decks like back in the day. So probably molten. I mean, for those of you who've been following Hearthstone, you know Warriors sucked for a long, long time until this Enrage Warrior. So there were years and years that Warrior was terrible. So, yeah, you have to go back pretty far for us to have just something just extremely disgusting. So I would say Molten was probably my favorite one. And then Druid. It's probably more just because I had fond memories of it more than it's just like super cool, but probably Force of Nature, you know, Druid, just the original combo, you know, back in the day, just more for memories and, you know, more so than it was like super cool. There's been obviously lots of cooler decks, since then, but yeah, probably my two favorite in terms of those two classes.
As Warrior goes, I thought you were going to, an old timer like you, I thought you were going to say either Wallet Warrior or Patron Warrior.
Well, Molten's older than both of those, right? So Patron Warrior, you know, like I actually hated Patron Warrior, to be honest. I don't know why. It just wasn't my cup of tea. I mean, I liked playing against him more than I did playing it. So which one was the Mullet Warrior? Which one was that?
No, the Wallet Warrior, the one that had all the legendaries.
Wallet Warrior, which one?
That was just, it was standard. It was in vanilla where you had just like all the expensive legendaries in there, like Ron.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I think I called it like Giant or Titans or something like that. I called it something probably different. But yeah, that was one that was fun too. But I didn't feel like that was very refined though. It was just like pick all your golden cards and throw, you know, all your golden high cost cards and throw them in at the end there, right? So,
well, that's what we found. We found how unrefined a lot of those decks were when they brought back Classic for a while, because now we have data and statistics, and which is redundant, but we have experience. We know how to play these a lot more. It's kind of like Warcraft, right? So in Warcraft, you play the original raids and they're super, you took a long time to beat them, and then they start making bosses harder and harder and harder and harder, and then you go back to do like Ragnaros and it's like, oh, this is so easy. Like, why do we have a hard time with this early on? And it's just like that. It's like during this whole process, we've learned how to become better Hearthstone players through many things. So stuff that used to give us a hard time back then was nothing anymore.
Well, that's true. But I mean, I think the removal cards are just disgustingly good now when they weren't that good back then. I mean, literally Freeze Mage was like one of the main ways we would remove stuff with Doomsayer and Frost Nova. I mean, that's how, you know, limited removal was back then. Brawl was the best card, probably, you know, like removing stuff. And, you know, nowadays that's, priests have like five cards that remove the entire board, you know, like easily.
No, but what I mean is when we went back to that meta for Classic, when we revisited a lot of those decks,
you mean,
the decks that we thought were as good, and I didn't do a whole lot of this, but I know that there was people, the meta was a lot different than it was in the original time we had the vanilla, because we became better players. We have more statistics. We can say, why are we actually playing that card? That card's no good, when everyone thought that it was. We're not talking about Boulder Fist Ogre, obviously.
Right. That's true.
But yeah, it was it was just interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure we're much better players now, in pilot wise and deck building wise. So that makes sense.
So Chan Man, what is something interesting about yourself that people probably don't know?
Oh,
it could be something that our listeners don't know. Not like stuff, not something about you that's interesting that people in your real life don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe folks don't know that I'm a huge sports fanatic as much as I am gaming. I probably equally as into sports as I am gaming. So, football, obviously huge. Takes up a lot of my time on the weekends, college football and NFL. I'm actually a bigger college football fan. I actually think college football is a better product than NFL. But I follow all kinds of sports. Like I when the Olympics are on, like people are shocked at just how many sports I actually know about. But surprisingly, I probably know the least about the most popular sport in the world, which is soccer. Like I don't follow it nearly as much as everybody else does, but every other sport I probably follow closer than the average person. So, but yeah, I'm not sure a lot of people know that though.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Do you ever miss doing Value Town?
Ooh, somebody brought that up right recently. I was like on Allie's stream the other day, and then people were kind of asking me that in the chat. Yeah, I there are definitely times I've missed doing Value Town, and even just doing podcasts like y'all's, right now, there's definitely an element of it's just a lot of fun being able to talk about something you're passionate about every week. Just having a set time that you talk about with a good buddy and being able to do that. So that part of Value Town I definitely miss. It's really easy when it's like coincides with something that you obviously are playing every single day, and it's just like really just at the forefront of your passion. And I think at the time Hearthstone was, but then there was a time where I started getting into Overwatch, right, and I started getting into some other games, and that's when Value Town started becoming harder to keep up with. And we're juggling multiple podcasts, especially with different games and esports overall. I mean, just the esports one itself was enough to occupy all of my time, much less be able to, talk about Hearthstone in a very, just respectable way, right? Not just kind of like phoning it in. So, now that I'm kind of back, playing Hearthstone again, there's definitely times where I do miss doing it, but it's like, I think you guys and Coin Concedes of the world, I mean, I'm not sure. They're still doing it or not? Maybe they're still
going strong.
I wasn't sure they stopped after Hat or not, but I haven't really listened to it after Hat left, but you guys are doing a good job.
I saw an interesting thought on Coin Concede. It's the Coin Concede is the podcast of Theseus, however you say his name, because it's still going, but it's none of the original parts.
Right. It's just in name, right?
Because like OG Coin Concede was Cinder Ascendant, Korra, and I don't even remember who else. And then eventually they got Hat. And then it just, Coin Concede has just been running for so long. Like, it's been cool to see the evolution of the hosts and just how, like, the trajectory of different people doing other things. Like, yeah, Korra left, but she's a designer for Hearthstone. Like, it's been awesome, and Hat's on Hearthstone too, and who knows, like, maybe Coin Concede has like the secret sauce to getting an edge on being able to pass all the tests and stuff you need to get onto the Hearthstone team.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have had a good record there for sure. And but anyway, I definitely do miss talking, being on a podcast and talking, but at the same time, I don't know, I kind of have this thought, it could be right or wrong, but it's one of these things where I feel like content is in some ways a young person's game, in terms of just being in front of the camera and me producing and making decisions on that side of things, creative director type of things, I think is still really satisfies that that hunger I have, you know, in terms of getting ideas out there and executing on them. But being in the front of the camera, you know, it's like I still don't have a problem being in front of the camera and obviously talking like on y'all's show. But I don't know. I just feel like there's other people that probably could do it, can do it better, you know, and can and are just better at hosting than I am or whatever. But yeah, you know,
you know, I'm pushing 50, right?
Are you pushing 50? So am I. So. Yeah, but yeah, it just takes a lot of time. You know how much time it takes.
Oh, right? Yeah,
in terms of staying up, and I mean, you play the game so much, you know, it's like, and it really does take that level of, you know, I think commitment and focus for you to have a very good podcast, right? Just for the people listening to really learn something or really feel engaged or really feel connected, right, to you, and you're experiencing the same thing they are.
Yeah. And when I stop being as engaged as I am, I think that's when this podcast may not be a podcast, because, you know, how do you do something that you're not passionate about like this? Because this
that's
is
right.
taking up your free time. This is taking up time to edit. This is taking time to track down guests. And if I wasn't still loving the game, which I still do, then what would I be doing?
Right. And it's not fair to the, you know, if you have patrons or you have anything like that too, right? It's just like, for me, I didn't feel like it was like fair to continue doing it if I wasn't, my heart wasn't completely into it. So that's kind of where I ended up. And that, you know, I had that, you know, kind of retirement from, I think, content making. There are other decisions like that played into it at the time. But part of it also was I just felt really, I don't know, I just felt a little bit spread out too thin. And it wasn't fair to this, you know, community that I cared so much about to continue just, you know, phoning it in when I never phoned anything in, you know, in the past. And I just didn't want to do that. Even if it meant, you know, like cost me whatever, a lot of money or anything like that. I just didn't want to ever do that.
No, understood. And you are always welcome to come on this show. You just let me know and we'll have you back on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
But Doc, I think we have some news to talk about. Some good, some bad.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
So we're not going to go, we're going to talk about this for a minute. If you want to get some real in-depth talk about this, you can listen to Quink and see it in some other shows. We don't want to be super depressing, even though it is a depressing thing. But Blizzard did lay off 1,900 people, or excuse me, more precisely, Microsoft. Between Activision Blizzard and Xbox. And that was... It was expected that would be layoffs after a merger. That always kind of happens. They try to get rid of redundancy. They don't bother looking at the personnel they have. They look at it with numbers, and it's a bummer, but this was a lot. And we lost the survival game. Everyone that was working on that was let go, including people that we know like Matt London, who we wish was still here. And why they don't just put him back on Hearthstone makes no sense. But again, it's very impersonal. So if you see anything that you can do to help out, like if, some former Blizzard person has an indie game going or book, I know Matt London just said he had written a book. So if you can support those folks out like that, do so, you know, it's cause we always say, oh, I wish we could help. There are ways to help. So in those times, please do. But this is a bummer, but, it is what it is, I guess. Doc, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. Wish that we didn't lose all those people. But even if you see tweets of developers being like, hey, we have like three openings at this studio, retweet it, like, please, because that's the most we can do on our side, right? To be able to help these people that we love the product they have made, is if we, for whatever reason, see something in our timelines that is a job opportunity for them in the dev space, just share it for visibility's sake. Even if there's like a 2% chance they'll see yours specifically, anything like that is going to help to some degree. Yeah.
Jan Man, any thoughts?
Not too much that I'm sure a lot of people have already said, but yeah, it's a definitely sad time. I mean, that's on top of, you know, more layoffs that happened at another developer.
Riot.
Right. Like 10% of another. Yeah. Riot. I mean, we're talking about like thousands and thousands of jobs that were our layoffs that happened in a week. And we had Twitch had a big layoff even a month before that. Right. So it's been a pretty brutal early 2024, end of 2023 in the gaming space.
And some of these companies have had record profits too. Yay, capitalism.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, so whether, you know, we could talk about just obviously higher up folks, you know, making these decisions and some of them obviously being the problem. But, you know, in the end, it really sucks because there's a lot of talent, super talented people that don't have jobs right now. And in a way that can be a great opportunity, you know, for smaller companies or even just larger companies that do have hiring. I mean, not everybody's laying off right now. There are some people. Probably a lot smaller percentage compared to how many are getting laid off, but there are people that are hiring and they're going to be able to hire like really great people, you know, right now, which before it was more of a, you know, I would say an employees, you know, type of market where they would charge you a lot, right? Just for talent. And so this is kind of like the pullback on that. And so some salaries might be a little bit cheaper, you know, like in terms of the market going down a bit for salaries. And it's awesome that some people might be able to get these great people, but overall, yeah. And it's going to be, you know, tough times for some folks that are looking for jobs. Cause you know, there's definitely, you know, less jobs than people available right now, at least for this first quarter. You know, I think by the end of the year, everybody will be in good shape, but you know, right now it's a bit tough. I mean, that survival game, I kind of have mixed feelings. I'm really curious. Like, I wish I would have gotten a chance to, you know, play it because I heard some good things, but I also heard some things that there was some like butting of heads about that game too, because some thought it's like a survival game, but it was too easy. You know, it's kind of what I heard. I mean, this could be a little hearsay, but I heard that, you know, there was a little bit of like casualness to it versus, you know, other folks wanting to make it more hardcore because most survival games are hardcore. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of them. So, so I don't know. Yeah, I was really curious. I mean, they've been working on it for years. I just hate it when, you know, like Ghost and this type of thing gets completely scrapped and we never get to see the light of day when these people work so hard on it. So, that's a big bummer. And it makes me a little bit nervous, you know, in terms of just like what Microsoft's going to do, you know, like in terms of Hearthstone and over like these Blizzard titles, right? Like, what are they going to do? I mean, we always thought that they're just going to throw it in with the pass, right? But in terms of support and development, it's like, are they going to actually, you know, invest more into these? Or are they just, you know, just going to let these just kind of go out the wayside? Hard to say right now. I don't think they've made decisions or not. I mean, I think some of these are just, like you said, Tito, just part of mergers, you know, and reducing redundancy and whatnot. But I hope that there's some direction from, you know, their head of gaming that does end up seeing some potential in some of these games. Hearthstone still makes money. You know, it's like, I don't understand like how you would give up on a title that, you know, that doesn't require much resources and makes, and is profitable. Right. So I'm a little bit surprised because they never put much resources into Hearthstone, and Hearthstone's always been profitable.
Yeah. They need to invest more resources in it for sure. And I think, and who knows what's going to happen right now. It seems like for the most part, a couple folks aside, Hearthstone was relatively untouched as far as we can see, front-facing people. That doesn't mean that they didn't lose people that we don't know about, but overall it seems like they're okay. And it's, again, like you said, it's profitable. They it feels like they run on a skeleton crew, but I'm hoping that now that we're shifting things around, that we beef up a bit, they beef up a bit. And who knows, I don't know if Microsoft has a habit of, now that they've let everybody go and are refilling jobs, if they'll rehire some of the same people that were let go. I mean, I know I've seen companies do that where they brought somebody back a couple months later when they've kind of resituated things. So who knows?
Blizzard is famous for that.
Right. Well, speaking of so new hires, Mike Ybarra was out. We don't know why, but he said he made the decision to leave. Whether that's true or not, who knows? But we do know that as of today, Johanna Ferries is the new president. Brief bio on her. This is Googled. As Ferries originally joined Activision Blizzard in 2018 as commissioner of Call of Duty Esports. Before her new role, she served as the general manager of Call of Duty. Ferries' career also includes an 11-year stint at the NFL, where she last worked as vice president of club business and development. And not here, but I believe she is also a big driving force for what was it? The Colored Women of Blizzard or something like that. There was a initiative that she was behind. I don't have the exact thing, but she seems like, without knowing much about her, everyone seems pretty positive about her coming in. I think we're just hoping for some stability. We're hoping for someone that's going to take care of the employees and also care about what the customers want. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of my side, I don't know too much about her, so I don't think I have a strong, you know, that strong of an opinion. I mean, I feel like Call of Duty esports, at least, you know, some of the jobs that she's been in, you know, I think she's done a pretty good job with Call of Duty esports. Like I feel like CDL and just even before that with Call of Duty, it's been pretty consistent. I mean, it's hard to say if it's been like super successful, but It's definitely been one of the esports I felt like was being underappreciated. You know, like I just felt like it was run pretty well. I mean, compared to like Overwatch, I mean, CDL was run way better than Overwatch was, right? And yeah. So I've always felt like CDL needed just some more marketing push to be, you know, to kind of get into at least, you know, bottom of tier one, you know, type of thing. I felt like that I mean, it's North America only for the most part, but I did feel like Call of Duty was one of the positive things in esports, and I still think it is. I mean, they just finished their finals. Yeah, I think it was pretty exciting. It always ends up being a really good, exciting product, all the events and the you know, just the storylines and whatnot. So anyways, if she had a lot to do with that, then I felt like she did a pretty good job, at least in terms of, you know, the product itself. So you know, hopefully she can expand that into a larger role, and hopefully Microsoft, you know, kind of allows her to do, you know, I'm not sure how that responsibility is going to be given compared to, you know, just people who are more globally, you know, in charge in Microsoft versus who's in charge of Blizzard, like Activision Blizzard. I'm not sure how that's going to be decided there, but you know, new blood is definitely good. You know, I'm not sure if Mike was doing a good job anyways. So, you know, not knowing why he got left. I mean, it's a pretty weird timing as to when he left. So
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just, you know,
it seemed really divisive too. Like the things I've seen on social media are people were either sad to see him go and said, it's been nice knowing you, or they were really not happy with him at all. And had some not so nice words for him. But Doc, before you go, I just wanted to clarify. It said Farias is a senior lead advisor to Activision's African American Black and Friends employee network. So that was the role she had. Another role she had. But Doc, thoughts?
New face for this position, obviously. But I mean, if she's had esports as part of her career, that makes me hopeful for the, not this year, but for the future of Hearthstone esports, hopefully to have more oomph like it has in the past. So I hope she's allowed to have a bit of free reign on being able to help the Blizzard products where they need help. Like Chadman was saying, we don't know how much responsibility she's really going to have under the Microsoft umbrella. So we'll just have to see as it goes, but happy they got a position, happy it's someone who is seemingly pretty good at their job, and look forward to see what she can do for the Blizzard space.
Absolutely. Well, we did have a patch today, kind of surprisingly. We had, normally we get a patch on Tuesday and Thursday, and a lot of times they give us patch notes on a Wednesday or a Tuesday before, and then we have it. But today we got a patch notes and a patch on a Monday, which was very unique. But we did have some, it was all nerfs, no buffs, kind of. We're going to go real quick through these because it's already almost an hour. We still got some other things to talk about. So real quick, we'll go by class. So Velrock the Deceiver was a 3-6 and now is a 3-3. This is, and they also, let's have the other thing too. Shatter Shambler was changed from your Death Rattle minions cost one less but immediately dies when played to the next Death Rattle minion you play immediately dies. So they took away the reduction there, hopefully to get rid of, you know, turn three drillies after a bit of play. I think these nerfs are great. I think that it keeps the spirit of Velrock alive, although I think they could have made it a little harder to achieve. And the 3-3 means that they can't just value trade and step it back, and it's going to be a little more difficult to get as much value out of it. What are you guys' thoughts on the changes to Rogue? Start with Chan, man.
Man, I thought it was a... I mean, I agree with everything you said, but I'm actually surprised they brought it down, the health down to 3. I thought they would do it like, you know, like they normally do, 3-5 or 3-4, or even 3-4, I think would have been like, wow, you're going to bring it down. You know, that's a big step for them. But it obviously the data must have showed just it being ridiculously good, which I've experienced definitely games where it would just, I just couldn't do anything. I literally couldn't do anything to stop it. So, you know, I think this is a good change. I think it's going to, you know, it will nerf this a little bit. I still think people are going to play it and still, you know, play the same decks. But yeah, I like the change.
Doc?
I think it's a good change. Like you said, it's going to make it a lot harder to get all those essentially free value trades in.
Yeah.
Because you're really not going to be able to kill anything super worthwhile when it's only a 3-3. So I think that's a good idea there. It was surprising that it dropped down so far. Because like you said, Chanman, I think they usually only do like 1 or 2 HP, not 3. 3 yeah. Feels like a big old punch to the gut. And with the Shatter Shambler, I think it's funny to me that how much cost reduction gets put into Hearthstone and then is discovered to be a problem and gets taken away or reduced on how much cost reduction it is. Because if we look at all the cards that have ever had cost reduction within Hearthstone, I'm fairly confident in saying about 95% of them have gotten nerfed in one way or another. But obviously, like, when the card gets put out, there's infinitely more playtesting than they have internally. But I like the idea of cost reduction. It's just sometimes cost reduction, especially when things can get down to 0, is where it gets pretty bad.
We'll talk a little bit about cost reduction in a little while. Let's go on to Druid. Cactus Construct. Cactus Construct. Having trouble with words today. The old was discover a 2-cost minion, summon a 1-2 copy of it. And the new is now discover a 2-cost minion, summon a 1-1 copy of it. Then we have Herald of Nature, which was battle cry. If you cast a nature spell while holding this, give your other minions +1/+2. Now it gives them +1/+1. We also have Pendant of Earth, which was old discover a minion from your deck, gain armor equal to its cost, otherwise known as 20 from Naga Giant. And the new is discover a minion from your deck, restore health to your hero equals to its cost. And finally, 2 more for Druid. Shattered Reflections. We have choose a minion, add a copy to your hand, deck, and battlefield. New is choose a minion, add a copy to your deck and battlefield, not hand. And then finally, Due Process was 2 mana, now it's 4 mana. So they really touched every single archetype here. They've touched Treant Druid. They've touched Fatigue Druid. They've touched Dragon Druid. Everything here is going to affect a little bit. Maybe Dragon Druid not as much as the other two. But everything's hit. And I did see Wicked Good talk about how the fact that the problem with dual class cards is these cards got nerfed before they ever had a chance to find their way into a priest deck. Which, you know, fair. But I like all these changes. I still don't think that's enough to get really change the effect of Shattered Reflections. I think that's problem. The card's still going to be a problem. Pendant of Earth, that was just silly what you could do with that. And I don't think Herald of Nature or Cactus Construct is really going to make that much of a difference. So I think Treant Druid's going to be fine. Doc, what are your thoughts on these nerfs?
I think Treant Druid will be okay. Like, yeah, you're losing out on 1 HP on Cactus Construct, and you're losing out on 1 HP X however many minions you have. So 1 to 6 or 1 to 7 HP is what you're missing out on. But I feel like it's good. Treant Druid's gonna be fine. There's so much reload, they have so many buffs in that deck already. And then Rip Fatigue Druid and Mill Druid.
I don't know if it needs to rest in peace. It can just go away and even though, so I actually played.
I mean, I think they wanted to kill it, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they won. I mean, making it 4 mana, not 3 mana, they just won.
Oh, no, no. I'm okay with it being killed. I just don't think it needs to rest in peace. I think it can. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And I've played this deck. So I trying to be a better competitive player, I decided, hey, I got to actually work on this. And I played in a tournament for, what was it? No, for THL this week. My fifth game was, we were 2-2, and it was a Fatigue Druid mirror match. And I thought I played really well. And at the end, they played one last due process, and I had like 30 health plus a bunch of armor, and I just saw that go tick, 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 dead because of all the due processes between us and stuff like that. So, yeah, it is. But Shaman, any other thoughts before we move on to Paladin?
Not really. I mean, I actually like, I mean, I like all the nerfs. The Shadow Reflections, I think it's, I guess you guys don't think it's much of a hit. I actually think it's a pretty big hit to those owners. I mean, is the Treant Druid the one with the owner, like a 6 to 8 owners, like those decks, or is that is it the more of the rush deck, the Treant deck that you're talking about?
So the version that I play is just Treants with like double cultivate with, it's just right. Go wide, get tall. Right. I don't run Aonar in my list at all.
No, but this is
Have y'all played a deck that has like six? I mean, literally, just play Onar the entire like late game. They just play it over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's the one.
Because of Shattered.
That's the one that has the Forge, either discard a mana crystal or two cards, and that's a really strong.
Yeah.
Because you can just destroy a mana crystal, have a 6/8, and then Shattered Reflections it, and it's a really good card. I'm actually playing it in a couple of the Sludge Warlock lists. But no, I'm not saying it's not a good nerf. You're not going to feel the nerf, but I still think the card's really good. I think that they're just going to shrug it off, and it's still going to be a really good card. You're still going to see plenty of it.
It just shows you how powerful the Druid decks are. Yes. Like it's like they're nerfing all these Druid cards, and Druid's still good.
Well, do you remember a year or two ago when they had Guff, and they had
Astralor.
Well, they had Astralor and all that, and they also had the guy that the one that you gained armor for the amount of armor you gave, and then you had the draw 3 cards and create a minion for the number of spells in your hand, and a bunch of that stuff got nerfed.
Yep.
And then what happens with Druid is they say, "Oh, I can't play with those cards anymore. Sure, let me get the rest of the great cards that I wasn't playing because." I can't play those anymore. Exactly. So let me get the new old good cards, and then they become a problem. So I fully expect that Druid finds a way, much like, you know, dinosaurs. They're going to find a way, and I think they're going to be okay. But now
it's a rich class. It's really cool, right? The design of Druid and the cards. I mean, I don't like to break it up like this, but whoever's working on Druid is doing a good job, you know, in terms of designing all these interesting mechanics and being able to play around with nerfing and, you know, buffing and just having many different archetypes, right? In terms of what can be good. I mean, we're talking about mill, and then we're talking about, you know, a fast deck and the Treant deck, and then we're talking about this, you know, this owner thing that I was talking about as well. And there's probably two or three others that you're probably, you know, very familiar with too, Tito. So Druid class is doing great. You know, so it's pretty telling just how many cards are being nerfed. And then we're going to talk about the next class in a second.
Yeah.
So and amount of cards.
So with
as well.
Druid, the problem always is Nourish, right? It's like it always comes down to Nourish. Just like Rogue, it's always comes down to Shadow Step. They always nerf around those cards because they want those cards to stay there because they feel like it's the heart of the class, I guess. And so then you have these cool cards that might be fine on their own, but Nourish allows them to abuse it. Shadow Step allows them to abuse it. And, you know. Sometimes you just want to say, let's just get rid of Nourish and see what happens. It's not like they don't have enough mana creativity. They can now they have you gain 3 mana crystals, and if you're in the late game, then you get 3/7s with taunts.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't mind having a class where mana ramping is something, but just mana ramp 1, you know, like not 3. Because when you get to three, I mean, with the power level that we have, especially with, you know, modern days, modern Hearthstone, you know, we've evolved to, it's like, of course, the 10 mana plays are going to be extremely powerful. But even the 8 mana, 9 mana, and 10 mana turns are going to be extremely powerful. So first folks that get to that are obviously going to have an advantage. Druid will always have... Nurse will never be bad. Like, I can't imagine a world where Nurse is bad outside of, you know, outside of super fast decks being the meta, right? Like, Nurse will always be good.
Yep.
So, yeah, I just don't love it. I wish they would nerf that or just get rid of Nurse.
And how often have you been playing against a Druid and you develop a board and you're feeling really good? It's turn four and then they reno you and you're like, oh yeah, that's the thing that happens when I'm on turn four.
Yep.
And it's just you know.
Yep.
But we were alluding to the next class, which apparently I am a Pally main. I don't know for how much longer. But they nerfed Boogie Down, that the old was 3 mana, summon 2 1 cost minions from your deck. Finale, give them taunt. Now it is 4 mana, summon 2 1 cost minions from your deck. Finale, summon another. So they tried to offset the nerf by giving us another 1 mana minion, and they got rid of the taunt. Now, some people, this is the one card I think people are saying, well, maybe it's a stealth buff. I don't think so. I think that it's going to feel like a buff because people aren't going to know how to deal with it for a little bit, but then I think they're just going to shut it down. I think that the taunts were huge because it allowed you to develop your minions behind them and then buff them and protect them while you were ramping up your stats. So I think this feels like it's killed the card for me. I'm hoping not. I'm hoping people are right and that it might be good, but I don't think it is. And then they have Guardian's Grace, which give a minion +5/+5 Divine Shield, cost 1 less for each mana you spent on holy spells. And it's now nerfed to give a minion +4/+4 Divine Shield. Same thing. So even, you know, this is fine. Like, this is a long time coming. It's sad, but, you know, it's a fair nerf. I don't like the Boogie Down nerf. Guardian's Grace, I can respect. What are you guys' thoughts on this?
Yeah, so I'm kind of on the... Like, I understand losing Taunt is a big deal, but getting the other minion... I don't know, like, there have been the times where the other Taunt has saved me, but then there's been plays where it hasn't mattered that I pulled something that didn't have Taunt. So we'll just have to see. I'm okay with this. I'm not super upset or sad about it. And I think the change, Guardian's Grace from 5/5 to 4/4, makes sense, because historically, Paladin's been a +4/+4 class, like King's Blessing, right? Back in the day, or Knight's Blessing something, it was Paladin spell buff something 4/4. Like, +4/+4 has been in Paladin's blood for a long time. So, yeah, this change is fine.
I've had a lot of games of Paladin. I'm not feeling it, but we'll see. I'm hopeful. I am not completely against it. I'm not very optimistic. How about yourself, Chan-Man?
I think that I'm kind of with Tito, where I think the taunt is a big deal. I think it's not for, like, I don't think it's a big deal. Like, my warrior playing against Paladin, I don't think that's much of a big deal, you know, in terms of that. But I could see, you know, playing against faster decks, just the taunts just make inefficient trades for the other team, right? And obviously developing behind it, but it makes for very inefficient, you know, turns for the opponent that the next turn, you know, hitting 1/1 Divine Shields, where you can hit something more, you know, just that just is better suited for like a 2 damage or 3 damage minion.
Yep. Right?
So I could definitely see that being a big deal. In terms of the Guardian's Grace, I don't think that's that big of a deal. I mean, it's, people are still going to play it. I don't think it's going to be not played because of it. You know, Paladins need any kind of buffing card, right?
So mm-hmm.
A lot of win conditions. So that's one of the cards that they need to play. I'm surprised they didn't nerf the Wind Fury Divine Shield card. Wait, what's it called again? I forget the
Shroomscavate.
I just,
and
Shroomscavate.
And they said they're keeping an eye on it. And the other thing, the one thing that really kind of, I guess, maybe feels bad about the nerf is I don't think that the pure minions like are good enough to not have the taunt to get from Boogie down. So that means you can't really play the pure list as much anymore. Maybe there are good one mana minions out there, but man, I want to play the Countess. I got like a month left with her. She's a good, good girl. So I don't know, yeah. But they have nerfed one final card, and this was Thaddeus Monstrosity, otherwise known as.
How many times is the third? Ridiculous.
Third.
It's just, yeah.
They went from your cards cost four less, swaps Valera each turn. Your taunt is now taunt. Your odds cost two less, swaps Valera each turn. So now I don't know why they did this. I think that they should have just, if they just said your cards cannot cost less than one, it would have been fine. But
right.
Exactly. In this case, they've actually brought back Pyrotechnician. So if you've missed Pyrotechnician, you can now try to make your Fire Druid work again, although I don't think it will. I cannot wait for this card to go away, along with Astalar, and they can just, you know, live in wild and, you know, you pop up once in a while. It's amazing how much Astalar still sees play. Even if you didn't have Warrior taking advantage of it, it's still just everywhere. It's just, I like it when the minions that are powerful are your class minions. And when it's a neutral minion that you see in multiple decks all the time, it just, that's what gets old for me. It's the same, like, I'd rather lose to the bomb bot, whatever his name is, bomb guy, in Warrior, or I'd rather lose to Fi the dragon or something than to have multiple games where we lose to Astalar. And it's not as bad as it used to be. It's not that big of a deal, but Astalar was a big part of the Year of the Wolf. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still a super good play with Bran. I mean, anything with Bran and Astalar is good, no matter which Bran you're talking about. So yeah, I agree. I think the Astalar, they should really be thinking about, you know, doing away with Astalar. I mean, does Astalar disappear this year?
Yes.
Or it goes away. Okay. So it does go away. So they don't have to do anything. But yeah, obviously it's one of my win conditions, my warrior that I'm playing, but it feels stupid.
But it's the same with Yogg.
As long as I get Astalar down, I pretty much win, right? Like
but it's the same with Yogg, right? It's another neutral card that used to cost zero most of the time that people are still playing that it costs nine, and it affects the game all the time. And it, again, if it was like a class card, if it was, hey, we play this in Demon Hunter, then whatever, but it's in so many decks, and again, not as prevalent as it was, but it just kind of like, well, I'd rather not see it be lose to it by like three or four different classes.
I mean, with Yogg, I feel like they could just change one of the ability. Like the mistake they made with Yogg is they have two removal abilities, like major removal abilities, where none of the other, you know, the none of the other equivalent type of cards have that, right? So if they just changed either the middle one or the, you know, the single take or the everybody attacks each other, if they just change one of them into something not as powerful, I think it would
how you change it.
It's just right now.
Here's how you change it. Instead of minions on my side, it's a Hysteria. All minions attack each other. And instead of targeting a minion you could take control of a random enemy minion.
I mean, I still think, I mean, the Titans are supposed to be, they're supposed to be beneficial to you, right? Like, or the gods are Titans.
But it's Yogg.
But,
Yogg is chaos.
I know, but it is, true, it is chaos. But yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do that, I guess that would definitely nerf it, obviously. But, so yeah, I don't know, maybe that's right. It's just normally all of these abilities are beneficial, or at least, I mean, they're not beneficial to your opponent, right? But they're somehow beneficial to you. It may not work with whatever combo you, or, you know, with what cards you have, like a spell power one or anything like that, or even doing damage to a minion. There might not be any minion on the board, but it's usually something that's like at the very least benign to you. It's something like that would be just, I mean, maybe it's just cast five random spells, right? That would be Yogg too.
Yep.
But right now it's just like, it's a perfect board removal or it's a perfect singular target removal, which is like, it's a nine mana removal card, like almost a perfect removal card. So I don't see why anybody else, I mean, anybody wouldn't play that card. I mean, I almost never do the third one. I never get to the point where I can do the third one anyways. So
let's walk it back a quick second. Doc, what were your thoughts on that?
Cost reduction. Cost reduction is such a hard thing to balance because you balance cards for what they actually cost. You don't balance them for how they get reduced. So cards like Thaddeus and what other cards that reduce things like inherently are always fairly problematic. So, I mean, I'm glad he's getting touched. It's just, I hope soon Team 5 is able to find like the true balance of like fair cost reduction, which is kind of counterintuitive or not counterintuitive, but like two opposites, right? Because fair and cost reduction doesn't necessarily make sense, but like, we have plenty of instances where the cost reduction was just way too much. And I'm sure there's a fine line of where like the value of the reduction will still make up for whatever the quote unquote downside of the card that you have to play to get the reduction. Like Thaddeus, he's 10 cost card. So yeah, there's like ramp and whatever, and some ways you can cheat him out. But then like for not cheating him out, like, yeah, the cost reduction, if you have to play him on turn 10, like you pay the price of having this card that's so valuable to you so much later into the game. So I'm hoping that in next year or whatever, that Team 5 is able to crack the code on having cost reduction not be so problematic.
Well, and here's the issue too, is we're complaining about it, right? But we're the vocal people that are engaged. They can look at the stats and say, people are playing these cards and they seem to be having fun with them. So it's hard to come back and not design a card that does the things they do because people play them, they have fun, they're engaged, they buy packs, you know? So as much as we say, oh, why do they keep doing this? Probably because people keep playing them and people keep liking them and they stay engaged. And that's the ultimate goal, right?
It is, but I mean, it's all relative, you know what I mean? They're having fun playing it. I mean, it's like I'm playing Bran Warrior. Brand Warrior's not crazy broken, you know, like cost reduction can be. I mean, Brand Warrior doesn't have cost reduction, right? And I think it does come down to cost reduction being a problem because it's counter design. You design cards in a vacuum. You don't design cards thinking that there's cost. I mean, you're just complicating design because you have this global thing that's called cost reduction, and you have some cards that globally change the value. Value calculator for all these cards. So imagine trying to have to go back to all these cards you designed and trying to figure out how to balance them based on a card that's in the meta that's causing problems. It's like, why go and, you know, why have to consider that and just, you know, you should just do something about cost reduction. I mean, Thaddeus is a 10 mana 11/11. I mean, a 10 mana 11/11 is like a vanilla card just by itself. It's like it's what a vanilla, you know, arena card would look like back in the day, right? You're giving it like a giant power on top of that. That just doesn't make any sense. I mean, this card should be like 6/6 or something like that. I mean, it should be something ridiculously small, you know, if you're going to give it something powerful like that. So the balance in itself is just way off, regardless of you know, cost reduction or not. But then you add on top of that cost reduction, the problem with that, then it's just insane. I mean, this card is just poorly designed. I've never liked this card.
If you want to make it so it's a little less powerful and keep it the way it is, instead of having it start even and go odd or whatever it starts with odd, right? Have that be random. Like, because the predictability of, hey, I can play Thaddeus after I kill my slime, it comes out, and then I have this plethora of odd cost cards that I then can do whatever I want with. What if it was even this time? When it first came out, then that throws off your ability to, you know, have that pop off turn and just be successful without having to wait a turn or something like that. So maybe that would be something they could do with it too.
I think Lore Master Eve was right on last week's episode of Blizzlet, where power creep and card design has gotten into this space where it's just good on top of good instead of a good thing on top of a thing that's not so good. Like Janaman said, making it a 6/6, making it significantly easier to kill with it costing so much is a good effect on a weaker body. Hearthstone has so little of that still in their design, because that's how Hearthstone was designed for a while, and then we've slowly gotten to this point. Like, it's just good on top of good equals busted or whatever. Like, it's not good on top of bad equals fair and playable or not playable. It's just, I don't know. It's, I believe in them. I believe in them. I know that they'll figure it out.
Let's just think about, like, this was not thought through very well. I mean, and it's not just like this current, this current set of cards. I mean, it was the prior set, previous set of cards. Whenever we even introduced, you know, slime just cheating Thaddeus. Period. I mean, we're talking about just Thaddeus. We're talking about like the back end of it being off, right? Even the front of it, and just, I mean, we're just talking about Nourish. I mean, we're talking about the same thing with slime cheating out, you know, Thaddeus or you know the 4/8 card back, you know, before this, you know, cheating out the card too. I mean, we're talking about the same thing. It's like, why do we even have that? Right? Like, why are we introducing the same kind of problematic thing in a different way in Warlock as well? Because that's what we're talking about. It's like, yep. Thaddeus only exists because it can be cheated out. You know, nobody played it on 10. I mean, nobody plays Thaddeus on 10.
Nope.
Yeah.
Or at least the first version of that. You know, the first copy of Thaddeus. Maybe eventually you just do whatever, or a taunt or whatever, you know. But yeah, I mean, so I don't understand why did we have to do that? Why did we design that? That doesn't make any sense to me. That's not a good job.
You know, because it's fun.
And I don't like being critical of the designers. You know, I love the designers. I'm just saying that that's a very clear problem they've created for themselves that they didn't have to create.
Because it's fun though. That's it, right? And I'm sure they designed it and they had some fun interactions that they played with. And then when they want the first week or the first day it hits live people, then they get a billion games of testing that they weren't able to do in their limited play sessions. And oh, wait, we didn't miss that. So if it's a fun card, they want to design fun cards. And if they constantly restrict themselves to not do the things that sometimes drive us mad, maybe they're not as creative as they want to be. And
but they've done so many cool things with Warlock recently. Like, you know, I enjoy the Sludge Warlock. I enjoy it. You know, like, I think all of these things are very different than what they've done in the past. And I think those are all cool, right? And they're very, it's very clean, like, in terms of how they've done it. And they can add stuff to it, or they can, you know, take stuff out of it, you know, between the expansions. You know, like, I feel like what they've already done with that type of archetype is very, very balanced and very fun and very, you know, like, I think it's pretty satisfying playing those decks too. But with this, it's just, I just didn't understand it. Like, it didn't even seem like a Warlock thing outside of it's undead, I guess it's undead. And you know, like, at the time, right? And then the slime part is like, I guess the slime ate Thaddeus at some point and he's coming out of him. Like, I don't know. I don't think I understand that.
I mean,
but,
to be fair, we ran into a lot of slimes trying to get to Thaddeus. if you were Vernax, you had to do the little Frogger thing. And how many times were raid? Yeah, we right, waiting right. on the raid because somebody died to that. But all right, well, those are the nerfs. But we have,
cool.
We have our esports expert Chanman. He's our man in the field. Last year, when we talked about esports, we were kind of a little down on the projection of Hearthstone and esports in general, but you were fairly positive saying, hey, I think this is starting to move in the right direction, or there's potential here. So how do you feel that has panned out over the last year? Do you feel like esports has changed for the better or for the worse? Just in general, not necessarily Hearthstone specific to start.
I mean, honestly, I think that last time we talked, I think I was moving in the right direction because I felt like it was going to be a pullback year, right? And I mean, that's what's come to fruition. I mean, I think we are seeing that. And overall, I think that if you, you know, you are investor in esports or anything like that, it's probably, it feels like a bad thing. It feels like esports is taking like a huge hit, and it is. But I feel like it was necessary. It's very necessary for us to correct some things that are deep rooted into esports. And unfortunately, it takes a lot of teams and a lot of organizations folding, you know, for that to happen, you know, to really get back to, you know, trying to operate, you know, more efficiently, just being, you know, smarter from a business standpoint and making money, like be profitable in esports, you know, like unfortunately we have a lot of fat that we needed to cut, you know, and I think that's what you're seeing right now is that some teams are folding, some teams are leaving games, and I mean, they should leave some of those games, you know, and some of these teams are, you know, being called out for how they're operating. And again, like this is all stuff that's necessary, and people think it's terrible that people are talking about esports that way. But in the end, it's like some of these things need to happen. Overwatch League folding, you know, like it hasn't been successful, you know, and it's had some bad luck as well, but the original vision is not even close to what they've been doing recently. And so going back to more of an open, I think that's good. I think Overwatch being more of your, you know, kind of just open to different operators and whatnot is going to be a good thing. It might be too late for Overwatch, but it's a good thing overall. And it's unfortunate because, you know, it started off in that state and it was great. And then Overwatch League came in and really forced esports to be, you know, to run in this league. And then it failed. So overall, the esports is kind of failing alongside it. But to answer your question, Tito, yeah, I actually think that this year's gone the way I thought it would go, which is, you know, you're seeing a lot of pullback, you're seeing, you know, a lot of cost reduction, you know, more efficient, just efficiencies being, you know, looked at, and you know, a lot of people again being laid off and you know, seeing that. But hopefully from here we'll see, you know, better operations, you know, from the existing organizations, you know, smarter hiring. Hopefully we'll see some, you know, startups and whatnot getting back into esports, but obviously being a little bit more, you know, prudent, or you know, entering the space in a more prudent way instead of just being thrown a bunch of money and just trying to get into it, you know, super quickly, and you know, having that pressure of trying to do something huge right off the bat instead of something more organic, you know, testing with smaller stakes and kind of growing that, right? It's unfortunately kind of what I expected.
All right. Well, we got our Hearthstone esports announcement, and that they're down to two events and then the finals, which is now 8 people instead of 16. So the way it's felt is that they've pulled it back even more, but the general overall reaction has been, well, it's worse, but at least it's not dead, I guess. And do we think this is just kind of like a stopgap, like a gap year for Microsoft before they figure out how they're going to do Hearthstone esports? And they just said, hey, let's just kind of keep it similar to what it was. We're going to take a year to think about it. Or do you think that we're just going to keep getting whatever they feel minimal that they can give us and keep us interested? Or do we think this might be the last year?
Me personally is, you know, Hearthstone just getting the scraps, you know, is like,
yeah,
it's really on brand, you know, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. To be honest, I might be a little bit more in the boat of like, at least we're not dead. Just cause you know, what we've seen in some of the other Blizzard titles, I think has been pretty brutal. That's not to say that Microsoft won't decide to, you know, somebody else might get a fresh eyes on this and want to do something different. But you know, the reality, I think when it comes to Hearthstone esports is that just like any other esports, you got to prove it's worth doing. You got to prove that's worth, you know, like the viewership's there. And honestly, there hasn't been any viewership on Hearthstone esports in the last 3-4 years. No, it's been a while. You know, maybe the championships at BlizzCon has gotten some viewership, you know, but in terms of just any of these events during the year, it just hasn't been something that's very viewable. You know, I think the watchability of it at this point has been something that's been in question. And you know, I think there had been some talks about, hey, maybe a Battleground could kind of like be a very interesting esport, you know, and that obviously there's nothing for a Battleground this year at all, right? So that's kind of tells you where their mind is. So it's not looking great in terms of Hearthstone esports. I personally think that there's still a place for it, but I think they just need to have the right expectations and scope for it. Like, I would have liked to have them, I would have liked to have seen them open it up for like more local, like smaller region, kind of local organizers to have their own tournaments and, you know, give some of these tournaments points and have people, you know, just like have it, do it like more of a card game type of thing, you know, like have the esports operate that way. And then they could support, you know, what happens on the top end of it, like this. But I feel like they have really passed up on an opportunity to kind of go more traditionally how card game communities have been able to keep their competitive scene going, even if it's not like crazy huge. It continues to this day, whether it's Magic or it's Pokemon or any you know, Yu-Gi-Oh, anything. Those things continue even to this day.
Yeah. Like Pokemon, like I play Pokemon card game from time to time. You can earn championship points by winning. Like if your store is like a sanctioned league, you can go to your store, win like a league tournament, earn points. You win like four of those. You go to a regionals and you go to like a second regionals. And if you like top eight, boom, you qualify for worlds. Like there is like a set. There's like a set path. Granted, regionals for Pokemon is a giant tournament. There's hundreds, if not like 1,000 or 2,000 people there competing. But like there is a set path for you to start at your own shop or your own local and go to these bigger and bigger tournaments to get the opportunity to go to that big stage. So I completely agree that I think Hearthstone should try to look at doing something like that. And even having like grassroots, like Hearthstone esports, like Age of Empires 2, 25-year-old game. Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition still has a competitive esports scene thanks to a single person's passion. And it's evolved into like six different giant tournaments throughout the year. So T90 Official, he just got done casting the Nili Apartment Cup Invitational. He's getting ready to cast Hidden Cup 5. He's going to be casting Red Bull Wololo. Like there's, if you have the desire and like the willpower, you can start a grassroots thing and have it blow up into something that lasts for a long time. Like T90 started casting Age of Empires 2 games when he was a college student. And he just kept doing it and kept playing and was casting these high level games. And then this whole esports scene blew up just right around him. So there's always a chance. Granted, Hearthstone people that want to do Hearthstone can't use the word league, but you can again.
Yeah, you can now. You can get it now.
Okay. That's news to me. But there's always a chance, but I agree they should do like a point system from local to a regional. Or even like a local to a district to a regional, if they want to make it have more events that way. I would totally support. I mean, I'm going to support Hearthstone esports no matter what. But I feel like the formula would be better if it's changed.
But they used to do stuff like that, right?
I mean, you take away Fire.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you took away Fireside Gatherings. Like, why not just replace it with this? Right? Because, I mean, that's what I used to do on my Fireside Gatherings. I used to do tournaments. I mean, that's where, you know, that's where I met Salissa. You know, Salissa came to my Fireside Gathering tournament and she won it. And you know, that was like before she was, you know, Salissa that we know now. And that was super awesome. And I had these people that looked forward to them every 3 or 4 months. And the part that they look forward to is just playing in the tournament, right? So I feel like if you get rid of this, you know, you had this opportunity to basically do it. And that would have fed perfectly into, you know, in esports. And it doesn't take that much effort on their end. You know, like literally all you have to do is give points officially. Let the organizers, you know, do all of the record keeping and send you all the information. And you just literally need to keep a spreadsheet. That's all you have to do. I mean, that's, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty easy. And a lot of people would be happy to organize these things for you. It's not very hard to hold a tournament. Hearthstone's on your phones and your mobile devices. It's like super easy to actually run matches. So yeah, hopefully they'll think about it in the future. And I mean, the Hearthstone's a card game. Like, let's treat it more like a card game and less like a video game. And I think we may end up in a better space.
Well, they used to do not that specifically, but they used to have qualifiers, tournaments. You could qualify by playing on the weekend and catching a good run of cards. You could go to PAX and win a tournament there. You could do, there were many different things. You could grind on ladder. There was many different routes to entry. It just feels like they don't want to let other people do things in order to make it happen, and they also don't want to make it happen. So I agree. And this is a question that's a little down there, but why haven't we had real, and just even forget world championships or forget actual Hearthstone esports as related to Blizzard. Why haven't we had more third-party tournaments? Why isn't that really taken off in this void? Why don't we see like a lot more things where it's just like, hey, here's an invitational, or here's a, you know, everyone paid $50 and they bought in and the winner gets the prize pool or a good portion of the prize pool or whatever. Why haven't we seen a lot more of that? I mean, we've seen what, Solari, however you say it, and a few other things, but you would think that given we're only having a couple events a year now with Blizzard, that some of these things would fill the void.
I mean, it's Blizzard, right? Like, I don't know if Blizzard allow, I mean, they used to always have restrictions on any kind. I mean, maybe not the super small, tiny ones, but, you know, you have to make an argument as to like, you know, like what, is there a reason you want to do that? I mean, it takes like super, super passionate people, I think, to run it, like with just like 10 people or something like that, right? I think you still see, I don't know if you see Hearthstone, but I think you see like Smash and things like that at small lands, you know, like local lands. I wouldn't say lands are super, you know, taken off these days either. You know, like there was a time where maybe Nurture Gamers and stuff was doing it, but you know, I don't know how well they're doing right now. I think it's a bigger thing more in Europe than it is in the US. But you know, I think those are probably the closest thing, like at least the venues that would make sense to start doing it some more. But I do agree. It's like, I don't think it's very hard to do it. And this is what I mean. It's just like, in terms of esports, I think esports needs to, you know, like scale down, right? And figure out, okay, how can we make like a local tournament with maybe, you know, 20 to 30, I don't know, maybe up to 50 people. How can we make that worthwhile for the organizer too? Right? Like, this is an opportunity to not only just like make it worthwhile for players and, you know, people like spectators, it's a way to actually make it worthwhile to even organizers. Like, it's just this whole ecosystem needs to figure out how to, you know, do better business too. You know, and I feel like if we could figure that out, somebody could figure that out and, you know, basically create a playbook for everybody else to do it, then, you know, you'd see a lot more of these popping up. And then if it feeds into the actual top level esports, then, you know, then all of a sudden you start having more of an oiled machine and all kind of makes a little bit more sense, you know, like in terms of interest, in terms of engagement. But it's got to, you know, like you said, Doc, like it's got to start at the grassroots, mm-hmm. You know, it's got to start from the bottom again. That's where esports started in the first place. And we got to get back to that. Build it from just a few people. Build the interest from a few people and try to grow it into hundreds, grow it into 1,000. Not just go after tens of 100,000 people right from the start.
Yeah.
You know, don't do that, because you can't test many things doing that.
Yeah, I think the new system too. So like the system's very grindy, right? That like people, you have to get finishes.
Yeah.
You have very. To people have given up in like by January because they didn't have a good finish. It sounds like this year is a little better because there's some months they can take off. There's only two events to qualify for, so it's a little bit, but it's not a great system. It doesn't give us the stories, right? Having someone having Meaty sit at his computer 16 hours a day and then go be a doctor at night or whatever he does, it's a story, but it's okay, sure. The stories are when like you get the like Ant came in and started winning, or you know, you have like this like 17-year-old kid that's all of a sudden, you know, running through these tournaments and stuff. There's no stories. And that's what I found was most engaging. I found the story is almost more engaging than the play itself. It's just, you want to, if you're going to watch sports, esports or sports or whatever, you want to be able to root for somebody. And sometimes it's just a good game and you pick the side that you think is the underdog and you root for them. But it's the stories that really kind of draw you in. And once they got through with Grandmasters and stuff like that, there's been like no stories.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, the system, the structure can lend itself to that. But yeah, I've always been a big proponent of of you know, trying to tell these players' stories, you know, whether it's within the production or whatnot. I mean, you know, a lot of these, you know, one thing I like to do is really study just what people do on you know, just TV shows, you know, or reality shows and things like that. And you know, what you'll notice that most of them, it's not really about like what the main competition or content. Like, I'll give you an example, like American Ninja Warrior. You know, or like American Ninja Warrior, it's not so much about the physical feat as much as it's about the backstory of every one of these contestants. Like that's the part that's, you know, very engaging to folks. And then, you know, just the physical feat is just, you know, an element of it that keeps, you know, that keeps an interest, or at least it creates a roadmap, right, for the content itself. There's a competition that people are trying to win. But the meat of the content is actually the stories behind the player. And so I agree. I mean, like, this grindy thing doesn't lend itself to, like, you know, at least how they're getting qualified and how they're winning. It doesn't lend itself to much of a story outside of just grinding every day, playing Hearthstone.
Would we care about wrestling if all we did was get in the ring and fought?
Right, exactly. No,
it's exactly. Everything around it. It's that. But all right. But looking at the system that we have now, which, you know, isn't great. If we were expecting them to keep it on the same small scale, like, not much is changing. But is there a way they could do it better within the scope that they have? Do you think? Do you have any ideas? Like, that's not so grindy that they can still have their small turnouts, their small, like, hey, only 8 people are qualifying here, 16 people qualifying there, without making it so that they're sitting at their computer grinding for months at a time?
I mean, I think that you could either have, I mean, it'd be additional events, but you could just have certain events that you can either have certain showings and you just qualify, right? Just have the qualification be a little bit easier, right? Into these bigger tournaments. And, you know, you might just have more people at these bigger tournaments. I think that would lend itself to a little bit less grindy elements. I mean, grind to get to qualify for one of these tickets, right? And there's a bunch of different tickets, like, you know, before each of these events. So giving more opportunity to qualify for the events, I think would be good. You know, like, whether it was every weekend or whatever it is, like, just adding more opportunity to do that versus just like one way to do it. And it's like, you have to, you know, there's only a few spots and you have to like grind the ladder, you know, which nobody loves to do anyways. It's like, why would you lean into that, right? So it's tough. I'm not saying it's an easy thing to come up with, you know, but I don't know. I don't know if this is
the system
right
that we're suggesting is the old system that we used to have, which is fine, but like, I don't know. It's just, they could do this better. They really could. And I hope that, and again, we're all happy it's still here, you know, yay sports. But man, I just, you just want it to be better. You want them to embrace it, and like Riot does, and some other places that they just like Riot doesn't do it for the profit. Like, the profit's nice, I guess, but they've come out and said that, like, we're doing this to keep our player base engaged and give them things. But then again, they just had layoffs, so who knows, right? It's a complicated system, and how do you get investors involved? How do you make it profitable so that way people want to?
I mean, we don't need to do all that. See, I mean, that's the thing for me. It's just like, I would prefer, like, we don't get any viewership on this anyway. So who cares about trying to get, like, you know, sponsors for, I don't know, just 10,000 views total, you know what I mean, on this whole thing. So, like, who cares about that? Like, why don't we just, like, pull it offline, just literally run live events and, like, do some type of, you know, I don't know, it's local sponsorships or what, just like try to figure out how to monetize like that audience or just the players themselves. The players themselves would be happy to spend more money at events. You know what I mean? And so I would rather us be testing that in that environment and trying things, you know, trying to create more of an event centric type of qualifying and at those events, you know, like replace the Fireside Gathering and have, you know, take that kind of approach. These are actual events, you can qualify there. You can actually engage with the community there too, and you can monetize these people too somehow, you know, with some, you know, something, right? I don't know what it is. I haven't really thought about it much, but I just think that like gamers are willing to open their pockets. I'm like, I've been to Genesis and these like fighting game community events. And like people are spending money left and right, dude, whether it's art or it's like controllers or it's shirts or like people are spending lots of money at these events. So like, I feel like we'd be better served in terms of just being more, just having profitability by doing that kind of stuff instead of caring about viewership, which is not going to happen. Like nobody's, you know, Hearthstone's not as popular as it used to be. You know, we don't even have the influencers. So people aren't going to watch these events.
Does Blizzard still own that like arena that they built? They had for esports. Didn't they like invest in an arena or something that they have like for live esports? Because all you need is, what if they just had a local area where you have games every week, charge $12.50 for beers, and just keep having events, and you can have multiple different events for different games, even branch outside of Blizzard, go and you know just sell. Sell expensive concessions. That's how Fenway does it.
Yeah, I don't think they actually have I mean, there's like there used to be esports arena and stuff like that around there, but I don't think Blizzard built one themselves. But yeah, I mean, I think we need to put on that kind of cap and start figuring out how to make money at that level, and then we can kind of grow this into something more again. You know what I mean? Hearthstone doesn't have the same challenge. Like we're not even in the same vicinity as League of Legends and Counter-Strike. Like we shouldn't even be remotely thinking like that. Like not even close. Like forget that. And I would even just focus more offline. And then once it becomes something a little bit, you know, once it's got some momentum, then you can maybe revisit online. But offline is, I don't know. I feel like offline is a really interesting opportunity that, honestly, the Hearthstone community hasn't done that much of. You know, we had some DreamHacks where you could, you know, like open DreamHack tournaments for a while, but those were cool. Those were fun. I mean, yeah.
Those were so much fun. I went to DreamHack Denver and that was incredible. And like the storylines that happen at DreamHack tournaments are crazy. Like there was a 9-year-old kid that played through the 200-person field and made top 8. Like, that was insane. Like, this kid had 100 and, like, had, like, 200-300 people watching him in top 8. Like, it was crazy. Like, I don't know. Just find conventions to throw live Hearthstone back in, and it will reignite the embers of Hearthstone esports that still exist.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Pokemon, I saw like the Pokemon championships were happening and there were like tons of people at that, where I think it was overseas. Right. So Necro was at the Pokemon championships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She casts.
Yeah.
Yep.
So definitely potential for a different, you know, just approach it differently.
All right.
Oh, okay. So it will.
No, open. No, that was from like, that was a long time ago. That was from, so I sent an article. It was from September 2017 that Blizzard has found a new home for esports. So I'm pretty sure they had something. I just don't know what became of it. But anyway, we're coming dangerously close to Coin Concede territory with our recording length. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Any, Chan, do you have any final thoughts on the current state of esports, Blizzard or otherwise?
I mean, I think maybe the final thoughts on esports is like, you know, don't give up on esports for sure. I mean, esports is still relatively a big industry. You know, like there's still lots of money still being made at the top. But you know, don't be surprised if you continue to see some teams leaving games, teams folding up. I mean, there's going to be more of that before I think you're going to start seeing the opposite. So yeah, you know, keep watching esports. You know, whether it's, you know, Counter-Strike or League of Legends. I personally, you know, love to watch Rocket League as well. And you know, Valorant, yes, once it's back. And try to support even Overwatch. You know, I think Overwatch is trying to find its, you know, like how it's going to continue. They announced, you know, what their plans were recently, if you want to check out those videos. You know, I think it's an opportunity for a restart for Overwatch as well. So hopefully we'll see something new. So overall, you know, I think that it's just going to be one of those years and hopefully we're better from it at the end of the year. Maybe in a year we'll come back and talk about it again. And it's like, okay, like we're seeing, you know, some seeds starting to grow back again, you know, and you know, it's going to be this time around, I think we'll be smarter, you know, and hopefully, you know, not influenced so much by just a ton of, you know, investor money that was, I think, hurting something. Even though having that money was awesome, I think it hurt just in terms of some decision making.
Fair enough. Doc, final thoughts?
Yeah, support esports of any variety, like Chanman was saying. Like, esports in general for me is so much fun to watch if it's a game that I even remotely follow, because just like watching professional sports, you're watching some of the best people in the world at their respective field doing the thing that they're good at. And so it's just fun to watch the people be good, and just the more people that watch them, the longer it's going to stay around.
And just give me back esports. Give me as much as you can. I'll take it all. Bring back the bundles that used to fund the prize pools, and don't put a cap on them this time. Let us help fund the esports if that's what you're going to do. Because those programs were successful. And, you know, I just want to see more Hearthstone. I love Hearthstone. Let's see people playing at the highest level, because that's where you learn. That's where you have fun, and that's where you get good stories. And that's what keeps people engaged in Hearthstone on some levels. So that was a lot, Doc. This has been a long episode, but you know what? I think I have a little room for dessert. How about yourself?
Yeah, dessert sounds pretty good. So, Jan, man, this question didn't exist the last time you were on the show, but what is your favorite dessert?
What's my favorite dessert? Good question. I'd probably say it's either a really simple one, like my day-to-day favorite dessert is probably just like, yes, as plain as it sounds, just chocolate ice cream, but I do like molten chocolate cake.
Okay.
Like if I go out and eat something, you know, but yeah, just, I don't know why. It's like, I have tried all kinds of crazy ice creams and all these fancy ice creams, and it always just comes back to, I just like chocolate ice cream. Like, so yeah, whenever I have ice cream, I just eat chocolate these days.
Nice. So listeners, leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing, good, bad, the ugly, because we want the show to be the best it possibly can be. And if you leave us a review, we'll read it out on the show. You can also email the show at breadandbutterhs@gmail.com, and we'll also read that out on the show. Chanman, where can people find you?
You can find me on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. ChanmanV, pretty much the main place to find me these days. I think Twitch, I mean, I still have my ChanmanV Twitch, but I don't do anything. So yeah, just find me there. But yeah, thanks guys for having me on. And I just want to kind of get in there before the outros. And it's always fun to get a chance to talk Hearthstone and esports with you guys.
Yeah, thank you for being back on. It's been a pleasure both times, and hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Cool. Yeah, anytime you guys want.
That's good to know. Doc, how about yourself? Where can people find you?
Yeah, primarily you can find me on Twitter, and eventually when I can start streaming again, you can find me on Twitch at Doc McButt on both websites. Tito, how about yourself?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch at Tito Santana HS. Chanman, do you have any shout outs this week? I know you kind of just half did that.
Shout outs? Maybe the shout out to, I guess, the Chiefs for getting to the Super Yep. Bowl. And all of the Taylor Swift and Kelsey. Media that we see on everybody's feed. I know there's plenty of people on with some political intentions that don't love that for some crazy reason, but you know, overall I think it's been really great, and it's just, you want to talk about storylines, yeah. It's obviously great to have a greatest of all time storyline. We talk about, you know, Chiefs, Mahomes, and Kelsey,
yeah,
too.
Kelsey and Swift, like, yeah, it's crazy, it's cool. I'm sad the Lions lost.
I could go another hour on that, but Dan Campbell, man, that cost him the game. That's really, really sad. They should have, yep, won that game. That's crazy that they lost that game.
How about yourself, Doc? Any
sorry.
Oh, no.
Didn't mean to. Well,
you're we asked the questions.
yeah. Thanks again. It's been a pleasure. It's fun talking to you always, and Yeah. How about yourself, Tito?
Definitely Chan-Man, who filled in at the last minute. We had a guest that was scheduled, but ended up getting sick. Hopefully she's okay and doesn't have the vid. But I asked Chan-Man that we were going to have him on in a couple weeks. And I said, hey, how about Monday? And he was like, sure. So we appreciate that. If you are still here, dear listener, after this epic episode, we appreciate you. And let us know what you think, like Doc said. And if it's a little too long, we can try to keep it shorter. But sometimes, you know, you just have good conversations and you got to let them go. But I think we're finally toast. We'll see you later.
Bye-bye.
Slide two brothers meet one another when they slide up to the mic. It's bread and butter with one another. Let's start up that recording light.